Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. I'm John Manuel, along with Jim Schroeder and Mike Lanana, talking college baseball, as we do every Monday here in the Baseball America podcast nook. All of our college coverage is brought to you by Louisville Slugger. You can check them out on Twitter and Instagram, at Slugger Nation. And our second week of the college baseball season is in the books, the coldest week of the season so far. We've had two very cold, very wet weekends in college baseball so far. I even saw spring training tweets from Major League broadcasters and beat writers who are out in Arizona, and there's rain in Arizona today. So it seems like we can't avoid that kind of weather. I know it was cold in Florida even this weekend, but you're watching the Miami-Florida games on SEC Network this weekend, and there's some jackets and even some gloves on some of those players. But that's, of course, that's Miami players who are Gainesville's up north for people from South Florida. I remember it seemed like it was forever when I was in Boca in high school, driving up to Gainesville to go do a campus visit. That seemed like a long drive. I don't remember how far it was, but it seemed farther than it needed to be. So we had a lot of weather-related issues. Jim Schoner, you did get some college baseball games in this weekend. And,
I did. Not as many as I hoped for, but I got something.
Not as many as you hoped for. Mike, you basically have a man the remote control and the streaming of games this weekend, because around here, there was nary a college baseball game to be seen.
No, there's really slim pickings here in this area. So I was, like you said, I was manning the remote. I was looking at box scores, reading lots of stats. You know, I wish I was out at the ballpark, but
sometimes it can't happen. I know a lot of scouts who are doing the same thing that you were doing and going around having to change their last-minute travel plan. So we'll talk a lot about that and our top 25 rankings this week. As always, we'll take some of your questions via Twitter. He's at MLanana. He's at Jim Schoner, BA. I'm at John Manuel, BA. Or you can email us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. We took one of those questions last weekend. But, guys, we did have a little debate at the top of the rankings this week with Vanderbilt, LSU. It seems like if LSU had actually won a game in midweek against Nicholls State, we might have jumped the Tigers at the top. But it just didn't seem like we could really reward LSU for that. Either of you guys concerned at all by Vanderbilt's, I would say, average-ish start so far? They've won two weekend series, but they haven't really dominated either opponent, whether it's Santa Clara or Indiana State. Does that concern you at all, Jim, or win's a win for you, the series win?
I'll say it's a win is a win. I mean, it's a little disconcerting that they're not, you'd like to see them be a little more dominant, but I mean, I think they're a team that's built to win a lot of close games anyway, so that's probably just the way it's might just be the way it goes, but and it is. I mean, they are the defending national champs, so they are going to get everyone else's best shot. It's when Indiana State and Santa Clara, when teams like that play them, it's their, it's a big deal for those other teams. But and plus, like we said, if LSU had either beaten Nicholls State or played teams more inspiring than Boston College or I forget who they played week one, Kansas, but
right.
If they had played a more
robust,
more robust schedule, it might be more of a push to move them up. But as it is, I mean, we'll see what they do moving forward. But right now, I think we were okay with just keeping it as is.
And for me, Mike, neither of these teams has really deviated from what we kind of expected. LSU's pitched pretty well with their youngish pitching staff, but they've mostly been more of an offensive club.
Right.
And Vanderbilt, even with some churn in their rotation, both from last year and what they expected to have this year, with some early injuries, they still pitched really well. So both teams have kind of been really as expected. We were chalk in the top seven this week. No real big surprises for any of those teams this week, at least for me.
Right. And, I mean, you would like your number one team to sweep both weekend series to start the season. But like Jim was saying, I think it's too early to make any radical changes at the top. You know, everyone's still kind of getting their feet wet, and pitchers
right.
aren't working their full workloads quite yet. They're pitching with pitch counts, that sort of thing. I think the temptation to move LSU to number one has been there since even before the season started. I know we gave some consideration to that, and there's some
yeah.
temptation last week as well. So it'll be interesting to see if they continue to challenge for that spot. And, you know, had they won in the midweek, maybe that we would have moved them. But
and it would have been tempting if Houston had swept Alabama to talk mm-hmm. about the Cougars moving up that high.
Right.
Texas
Tech
has
been good.
You know,
I would have pushed for the Cougars.
You would have pushed for the Cougars. Jim's in the bag for the Cougars this year, but and they've shown why. I mean, I just love also when teams kind of play to type. We expected them to hit for some real power this year, and so far Chris Eriart's kind of doing that for them.
And I like that they won They win a close, tight game, pitching duel on Friday. Saturday, they win a slugfest. Obviously, they did come up short Sunday. But that's, I like, you know, it's kind of, I like that they're showing they can win different ways.
And Alabama's good.
And Alabama's a legit team.
Yeah, we. I mean, I think Alabama's a regional team.
And I think when you're a team like Houston in a non, I won't say a non-power, but, you know, not a big five conference or right. what have you, to get a, if, when you get down to selection day and whatever, and you're talking about them trying to be a host and a national seed and whatever, that whatnot, to have a weekend series win against an SEC team that we expect to be good is a, can be a, that, that can be a big deal for them.
I thought that was, I think that is, and as well said, this series has bigger ramifications beyond the rankings. When you're coming down to, in Houston's case, their expectations are not just hosting a regional, but being a top eight national seed.
Mm-hmm.
So you're hoping that you have one of the things that could be a defining series for you is, yeah, it was at home, but beating an SEC team that I think everyone expects to be a regional team.
And they'll get another shot in a couple of weeks when they play in the Houston College Classic. They'll play right. LSU, and I forget. I mean, it's a quality field. I forget which other teams they're matched up with, but LSU is the main one. So they'll get another chance. I mean, also that'll be a, I suppose that'll count as a neutral sites game. It'll be basically home games for them at the Minute Maid, but. Still, they've got another chance for quality wins, and because obviously they won't have that many in their conference. They'll play UCF, but other than that, these early series are a big deal for them.
And it's not like they're going to really rack it up. Their upcoming weekend series is Columbia. That's not exactly going to be the big measure for them. But yeah, after that, they play LSU, Texas A&M, Hawaii in that series. So the matchup with LSU, obviously a super regional, a regional matchup that they won last year.
Rematch.
So you have the rematch
Blood
there.
Feud.
A couple of top three teams, and Texas A&M, a team that we wound up discussing this week,
did not rank them. Number 29 or so.
Exactly.
28, 29.
They're in that 26 to 30 range. We never go past 25, but that 26 to 30 range, certainly one of the teams we debated. Another team that has had an early season schedule not quite up to par with some of these other teams, which is every team's allowed. You really think about it. I don't know what the schedule looks like in college football. It feels like teams have at least a month to prepare before their season starts. And in basketball, it feels like the window for when Midnight Madness is changes every year. That seems like kind of just constantly is in flux. College baseball, they get 3 weeks. That's it. And it's 3 weeks of practice in January, January and early February for these teams. And, I just was reading an article. I'm on a tangent here. Forgive me. But I was reading an article this morning from a fellow, a guy I used to work with in college, Steve Politti, who covers Rutgers now. He's a big, he's a columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger. And he's writing about how Rutgers doesn't have a practice facility like all basketball teams have. And I just had a chuckle because somebody asked me during the week, actually, I think it was my nephew, was asking me if college baseball teams have practice facilities. I was like, I just laughed. It's like, no. Some of them barely have a field. I mean, a lot of them are on campus, but not all of them. Some even choose to move off campus, like Arizona State. But, he was asking about practice facilities. I was like, of course not. Why does basketball have to have a practice facility? It's a gym. Are you going to wear out the gym? And, I mean, if you watch some of these teams, they move back the bleachers. They have extra room to practice. They have 12 guys, 13 guys tops. How hard could it be to practice in your gym where you play? Why do they need a practice? I get it for football, sort of. They bring in a lot of money and have whatever they want.
Right.
But basketball, Duke is a great example. Nationally ranked, perennial, one of the top basketball programs in the country. And the baseball field is where it's been for years. Not a whole lot of improvements or expansion. Little incremental ones. But you look up on the hill down the first base line, and looming over it is this giant basketball practice facility. We're talking about practice, not a game. And so baseball teams can't, they're having to practice. They get 3 weeks to basically have spring training. They don't go south for it. It's difficult to expect teams to go hit the ground running from day one. So the teams that are playing close to what they expect to play at, that's impressive for those teams, and especially I think you need some weather breaks for that.
Nobody got any of those this week.
And no one's getting any of those. And even Florida and Miami, it was cold there. And Jim, you were at
were in
Myrtle Beach.
I was in Conway. Yeah,
so that was supposed to have decent weather, but even those games were delayed all day. Off canceled Friday and then scrambled
everything
Saturday.
Wiped out Friday because it was too cold. Too cold in Myrtle Beach.
Right.
Then Saturday, they got all the games in Saturday, but it was kind of a steady. it was supposed to be nice, but then it turned out just to be a kind of a gray mist, just kind of all day long. So it was not the not easy conditions, and so it made for some sloppiness. But still, at least I got to watch some baseball.
So Florida International was a team that was ranked there, mm-hmm. and that was the favored team in that weekend.
Who was
the best team that you saw in your mind? Just your quick take on Saturday and Sunday.
I will say Georgia Tech, but. Yeah, I mean FIU was disappointing. I mean they can hit, they'll score some runs, but their defense is rough to watch. I was just saying the conditions were tough, so that was a factor. But then again, this was not an isolated incident because we saw they made a ton of errors in week one.
And this is a weather advantage
club.
It
is, and they. They were kicking it around all day, you know, against that Georgia Tech. And they did – I think they do have – obviously, like I said, they can hit, and they do have some pieces in the bullpen I think they can work with. But they're going to win by scoring. That's what they're going
to
do.
They're going to have to match their way to it.
They are a team that can do it, but if they get into a game – I think I tweeted this. If they get into a matchup with a – you know, a small ball type of team, a West Coast team, it's going to be a long day for them.
That's not encouraging. Mike, I think both of you and I, just from afar, we obviously weren't there, but I mean, Georgia Tech just keeps on doing impressive things. We did not rank them this weekend, but that team looks like they're going to be right in that mix. I mean, we talked a little bit about Kel Johnson, I think, last weekend, but
right.
It certainly doesn't hurt. I think we're seeing the effects of the new baseball. We're seeing more offense. But it doesn't hurt to see a team like Georgia Tech that already, you know, returned most of last year's Letterman. Mm-hmm. A guy like A.J. Murray, who's physical, could hit a grand slam for them over the batter's eye in center field on Saturday. But to have a freshman come in and instantly contribute like that, like Kel Johnson has with four home runs.
Right.
I mean, I know they expected big things out of him, but probably not this big, this quick.
All right, he's made an immediate impact. And he won ACC Player of the Week last week, and he's in the running for it again this week. Like you said, four home runs. I mean, the numbers, I'm looking at them now, batting .406, .441 on base, .906 slugging. I mean, he leads the team with 13 RBIs. He's the man as a freshman. He's the man in that lineup, and it's definitely a potent lineup. And that's kind of been their MO for the past few years as well. I mean, they're a team that can hit.
That's it. Jim, I just like the depth of their lineup. When you can have guys, because Matt Gonzalez is not going to hit 200 all year. This guy's established. He's hitting three holes a freshman for them.
Yeah.
Really.
And I like the, obviously they got two seniors at the top of the lineup with Spingola and Thomas Smith. And I think the thing, obviously we have talked a lot about Kel Johnson, and we probably will continue to, but what stands out for me just kind of watching him is that the, you know, and we have talked, I think you and I have talked about in the past with the, you know, when you've got Matt Gonzalez, I mean, he's a good player, obviously, but when he was the last couple of years there, you know, he's in three hole for them.
Right.
And we've talked about how they just were not a very physical team the last couple of years, which is what we, you know, when you think of Georgia Tech, you think of, obviously you go back a long way to Jason Veritek and then Teixeira, Weeders, and guys like Luke Merton, Jake Davies. You think of them having guys like that in the middle of the lineup.
They always had those kind of guys. But it was not, and they weren't even the big pro prospects. It was like Jason Perry or Tony Plagman or Daniel Palka.
Mm-hmm.
They always seemed like they had that big thumper in the middle of the lineup.
They've kind of missed that since Jake Davies left. But now Johnson's – I talked to Johnson and Danny Hall after their last game Saturday, and Coach Hall kind of – you know, asked him about that, whether Johnson can be that next in that next kind of line, and then, you know, he certainly looks like that. You know, you agreed that he could, and that's and obviously he hits. I saw him his first at bat Saturday, hit a double off the wall first at bat. At the end of the second game, he hits an opposite field home run, and he kind of got a little anxious there. A couple at bats, he goes up there swinging at first pitch a few times, but I mean, it's he's going to be a force, and. You know, again, you and I talked about before the weekend that Georgia Tech, the pitching was the question, and it's still the question.
That's where I was headed next.
They gave up a bunch of runs this weekend. And
all those teams seem like they gave up a decent amount of runs, Jim.
Yeah, Coastal's the same way.
I don't sense that you saw a premium arm.
I did not.
This weekend, really. did you get a chance to see Albany at all?
I did not see Albany. Yeah, maybe they might. They pitched the best of anybody. At least a couple. Their first game, anyway. I guess the NC State over at the other park. But
I'm just trying to look at the. I'm just thinking over the other rosters. I don't think any of those other teams have an unsigned six-round pick like Steven Woods that Albany has. I mean, it was a six-runner out of high school at Long Island. I'll never forget the reaction of Rays officials when they heard that he was not going to sign, that he was going to eschew professional baseball to go to Albany, and they were incredulous about that. But, you know, John Mueller's been there for 16, 15 years, something like that, at Albany. Mm-hmm. He played indie ball a while ago in upstate New York and then wound up getting the job there. And he's been the coach there for a while, and they were competitive this weekend,
they
Jim.
Were. I didn't get to see them, but they beat NC State. They take Georgia Tech. They have Georgia Tech on the ropes and give up a walk-off home run. But
we're sitting here talking about weather. I'm going to guess that there's not a great indoor facility at Albany. So for Albany to go down there, that's just...
these were their first games of the year, too.
That's it. So, yeah. First games of the year, and they did not go in there to be the sacrificial lamb. Uh-huh. They competed. I just have something to file away and watch for the future. And, you know, Woods didn't even pitch great. He had 5 strikeouts, but he only lasted 3 innings. So it wasn't even... And he was bad last year, and he just didn't perform. So it's impressive to me that they went down there, went 1-2, were very competitive in that tournament.
And I will say for Coastal that I think, you know, the sets I got, obviously I went down there, I'm doing a story about their, it's kind of the state of their program and with the new park and everything, which is very, very impressive, the facility. But I'll say they were on top of the Big South for a long time. Now they've kind of been usurped by Liberty, but... And they've got some pieces. They got, you know, this junior college catcher, Casey Schroeder, hit a home run against Georgia Tech. He's got, you know, he'll be a difference in that middle of that lineup. And I think they'll be better this year for sure. They will not. It's probably too soon to say they're back to being a regional team. But I think Gary Gilmore sense was they're kind of he likes their arms, but they're kind of they're young and they'll probably be a year away. But they'll beat some people in that league. They're going to be a trouble. They're going to be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, and the investment that goes into that new facility certainly shows that what, you know, I think we've known for years what baseball means to that athletic department. Now, you were down there this weekend. We thought we were going to be able to see UCLA North Carolina this weekend, Mike. We should talk about that series real quick because that was, and we had Vanderbilt that relocated, I guess, Indiana State. They went down to Port Charlotte, Florida. So a lot of teams had to get creative. Louisville had to scatter from expected home series. They went down to Lake Point, the perfect game facility northwest of Atlanta, mm-hmm. and lost 2-3, neutral site, I guess, to Arkansas State. North Carolina and UCLA got creative as well, went down to Central Florida. You wrote about that in weekend preview, I believe.
Right.
Something like that came together very quickly, and then the series, in complete contrast, very slowly unwound with an average time of 3 hours, 53 minutes. Between the two top 20, you know, top 20 teams. It was essentially a pretty sloppy, high-scoring series.
Yeah, and winding up in Orlando, I talked to Scott Jackson, their assistant coach there and recruiting coordinator, and he told me that it was like a wild goose chase trying to find a place to play. They were brainstorming different places down south, and Terry Rooney offered the UCF Stadium, J. Bergman Field, which they were very grateful for, and of course they had to take a bus, a 9-hour bus ride to the stadium, which wasn't something they were as excited about. But yeah, it was the series dragged on for sure. What did you say the average time was for that series?
3 hours, 53 minutes, which is difficult.
Thank God there were no doubleheaders in that series.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult to fathom games taking that long. Now, we're not extra-inning affairs.
Right.
Those were 9-inning games. So
covering Carolina for 4 years, they were... Many a days and nights I was in the press box for 4+ hours. They certainly like to make many pitching changes throughout a game, which is, you know, you get some groans from fans, you get some groans from reporters in the press box. No one's really happy about it. It works for them, they win, but, and I know UCLA, obviously, too, they like to exert control over every aspect of the game, which...
And it's worked. I mean, it's worked for John Savage, you know. It's funny, because John Savage is one of these coaches who... You know, he's very regarded, very highly by professional scouts. I think he's a great evaluator. He's got a national championship under his belt. Certainly knows what he's doing, but UCLA is one of the more controlled teams. Every pitch is called from the dugout, these kind of things. A lot of signs, catcher standing up, all that kind of stuff. And they don't play, I would say, with a brisk pace. It's a very West Coast deal. Now, Gary Adams was the opposite. He was a coach who was kind of derided for just rolling the balls out. But the slowest team I could ever remember was 97 UCLA, where their average time of game was 3 hours, 34 minutes. And that was the Troy Glaus, Jim Parquet. I think Jim listens to these podcasts. Jim was the human rain delay on the mound himself. He was one of the slowest working pitchers I ever saw. So a lot of it is just the routines that players get into. They want to slow the game down. But, man, I mean, let's just hope that these teams are working out the kinks. Like I said, they had 3 weeks of practice, mm-hmm. you know, especially for North Carolina. Weather really affected their practice schedule, I'm guessing, a lot. Like Scott Jackson said, they got tired of being in the cages.
You right. know? Yeah, they were inside all week.
Yeah, and so they're inside all week. At least they got to go have a game. And kudos to Central Florida, first of all, for being on the road and playing a fairly challenging schedule, which is a big reason why they moved up in our rankings to number, what did they go, 15 this week.
Yeah, from 22.
From 22 to 15, you know, big seven-spot jump for going on the road and in that tournament in Mobile, Alabama. And second of all, for, you know, talk about college coaches in control, how much work does Terry Rooney and his staff and the baseball program there put into that ballpark, having it the way they want it, and then to trust these other two teams to play in their ballpark. Yeah. I think kudos all around for Central Florida for offering the park, for North Carolina and UCLA, their athletic departments, for being nimble and paying to change the venue there. I mean, and for all these other programs we talked about, getting creative, getting those games in. Much better to get them in on the road than to not get them in at all. And speaking of not playing at all, we had one of the top prospects not play at all this weekend, Michael Mattiuella. There's another option. That was our plan B.
Yeah.
Go see Michael Mattiuella. He doesn't start. I've played a lot of phone tag with Chris Pollard, but the scouts around here I've talked to, the release that the information they were sent by Duke was forearm strain with the cold and all those kind of things, did not want to chance it with Michael Mattiuella. Now, he was outstanding in the first week mm-hmm. against Cal. It was only six innings. You know, it sounds like his velocity dipped later on in that game. But he still threw hard and threw well in that outing. But between his back injury that we detailed here in the fall, the spinal condition that he has, which I thought was actually good news to learn exactly what the problem was and that you could manage it, I think there's that's the glass half full part. The glass half empty part is it's his back, and it's going to be a lifelong condition he's always going to have to manage. The scouts I've talked to, that was pretty unencouraging for them to get that news. And this missed start combined with that, I think if you know we had Michael Mattiuella at number two on our college list after Brady Aiken, assuming he was going to go to a junior college, I don't think there's any way that Michael Mattiuella is the top of the four-year list right now. If you're doing a snapshot, I don't think you can put him there, guys, because he's already missed a start. There are already these questions. Yeah,
His rap sheet is getting longer.
And I think that we were already too optimistic, to be honest with you. That's the feedback that I've gotten, is that we were already too optimistic, which puts the Kyle Funkhausers and Nathan Kirby's more toward the top of the list. I mean, I almost don't know what Michael Mattiuella could do now to assuage scouts, because they're going to want to poke and prod into that back. And if a 7-year-old elbow injury from his high school freshman season, that surgery is what affected Kyle Freeland last year in the draft, and he had to take a discount of almost $1 million to sign 8th overall with the Rockies. What's a back problem with no track record like Freeland had in the Cape Cod League due for Michael Mattiuella? Mm-hmm. I think that fans have to readjust. If you're a draft Nick, you have to readjust your expectations for where Michael Mattiuella is going to be in the draft, no matter how good the stuff is. And I really think the biggest thing people are going to watch for him the rest of the year is just when he starts, not how he looks when he starts. Mm-hmm. I mean, the stuff is the stuff. But the health there is going to be a big issue. I don't know if you guys – and then you have Suarez and Walker Buehler, two more
Logan Shore.
And Logan Shore getting pulled after nine pitches.
But still.
I was so mad this weekend, John. You know, I was so excited to cover UNC, UCLA, to go out there, and they moved to Orlando. And then I wanted to see Machuella when that fell through, and Machuella didn't throw. And then I wanted to turn on my TV and watch Suarez and Logan Shore go at it on SEC Network. And Suarez is scratched and Shore is pulled after nine pitches. I just could not win this weekend, John.
You could not.
I could not.
You were SOL when it came to your viewing options. Plan A, scratched. Plan B, scratched. Plan C, you pretty much struck out.
I did.
0 for 3. I mean, the Florida-Miami series certainly continued, but,
yeah
I mean... Logan Shore, obviously, not eligible till next year, but, I mean, he was the freshman of the year in the Southeastern Conference. And, you know, for a kid from Minnesota to go be the Friday guy in the SEC from day one, pretty impressive. But that series that series was really more kind of like a grinded out.
Mm-hmm.
Neither team was really at full strength the whole weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It just started off on the wrong foot. And
right.
Nothing really kind of went as you would normally expect things to go in that series. And to me, I mean, Florida holding serve really at home. That's kind of just how that went. I mean, I don't really. There's not a big takeaway from that. I don't feel like we know a whole lot more about those two teams after this weekend. Do you?
No, I mean, I think one thing that's encouraging for Miami is the fact that Enrique Sosa pitched well because they're trying to piece together a rotation after losing 2/3 of their guys, and now
right.
with Suarez hurt. You know, I think it's encouraging that he's pitching well. The fact that Woodruff pitched well as well. I mean, he's not going to blow it by you. He's going to be 84, 86. He only had one strikeout in the game. But the fact that he could hold a team like Florida and limit them is a good sign for them. And it was good that obviously Zach Collins
right.
Homered. And, you know, there'll be many more of those for him this year. But, yeah, no, I agree with you in that it didn't really tell us a lot. It's kind of what we expected, a kind of, you know, closely fought battle between those two teams.
And Florida, Jim... Mm-hmm. They're hitting home runs. I mean, Harrison Bader already has exceeded his career total to this point. But, I mean, I think we expected J.J. Schwartz would be
mm-hmm.
able to contribute from day one, and he has. And if any team is going to have pitching issues, Florida is a team that can overcome those.
Yeah.
You kind of plug Dane Dunning into the weekend rotation. That guy was highly regarded out of high school. You'd imagine they could try to if Shore were out for an extended period of time, Brett Morales, who, you know, what did he throw, 6 no-hit innings? In midweek, he could be pushed to the weekend. And Brett Morales, again, I remember seeing him in the Under Armour All-Star game as a high school junior rising senior. He was one of the top players in that game. I think he was the hardest throwing pitcher at that game. He and Connor Jones were probably the two best right-handers in that game. They're both in college. Actually, Hunter Harvey was probably the best guy who was in that game. But these guys are the same draft class as Hunter Harvey and opted for school. It feels like Florida is positioned to, even if they have to ease off Logan Shore a little bit, to make up for that.
Yeah, and I feel like it is encouraging for them to win that series without Shore and without Peter Alonso. They're
right.
probably their, you know, two of their biggest stars, if not their biggest stars. And so to still be able to win with shorthanded like that's pretty encouraging. So they do have depth both, you know, both sides of the ball really with a lot of guys. I mean, I know they like. Obviously, Bader's having a huge start. The freshman Schwartz, we mentioned. Obviously, Richie Martin and Josh Tobias are good hitters.
John Sternegle. John Sternegle's another guy who was Sternegle. He was very much, highly regarded, again, out of high school, one of the top, on the BA 500 draft-wise. I know he was projected more as a third baseman out of high school. If you're a pro scout, you really wanted to see him stay at third base, but he's playing some first base for them. With Alonso injured, and you know he's had good at bats, he's had some quality at bats for them. So, and they've really got a nice again, their freshman, not a J.J. Schwartz, but Dalton Guthrie has been outstanding toward the top of their lineup. Let's talk about UCF real quick, guys, and then take some questions that we have over Twitter. UCF really again jumping up the rankings this week, going to Mobile. Like I said, anything jump out to you the most about UCF, Mike? From this weekend, I mean, I know we were pretty aggressive with jumping them up, but. This feels like a team, again, when we're talking about freshmen, they've had a lot of contributions from their freshmen.
Right, and I'm going to take my time saying this name because it's a difficult name.
We want to say it right. You don't want to mess this up.
I want to say it right. Cree Finfrock and Kyle Marsh are their two freshmen who I know Terry Rooney was extremely excited about before the season began, and rightfully so. I mean, they're both highly touted, and both of them so far have contributed quite a bit. Kyle Marsh has been... like Kel Johnson at Georgia Tech, he's been the guy for them so far. Looking at his numbers, he's batting .476, .607, .952, two home runs, 10 RBIs. Those are some impressive offensive numbers for him so far, and he's a two-way guy, too. He closed the win against Maryland, which was a big win against a ranked program, a game that I believe Finfrock started that game, and he pitched well as well in his first two starts. You know, the thing about Central Florida is they're a veteran team, lots of seniors in their lineup, lots of guys who've been there before. They're a team that expects to win, that expects to succeed, and I think that's valuable in this game and at the college level. And so far, it's shown because they're 6-0, and they had an impressive weekend, you know, traveling down south.
That's what stood out to me, Jim, about them in the preseason was that veteran angle that Mike talked about. Like, I think they have 16 four-year players, what they wrote, between seniors and redshirt juniors. And they didn't even list Kyle Marsh as a potential position player. They listed him as their potential closer and talked up his breaking ball. And, so it's almost like a little bonus to get the offense they've gotten out of him. And it feels like they've always been a pretty veteran team that even old bats, new bats, whatever, they've always been fairly physical. So it just seems like this is a next step for them to take to combine some of these impact young freshmen with some of their veterans that they already had.
Yeah, my worry with them was just how the rest of the rotation would come together after Zach Rogers, one veteran guy they had. But I mean, Finfrock and Robbie Howell have both been really good, and you know, if that holds up, I mean, they're going to be. I mean, we kind of talked about how them and Houston are probably clearly the two best teams in that that conference, and that's going to be a really good race between those two teams. And I mean, UCF is they're probably going to keep moving up because they're probably not going to lose that many series.
Yeah, not when you hit like that, and it was a good field. And Arkansas is a team that's kind of on there's 6 or 7 college baseball polls now. Mm-hmm. They're in some of them, I know that. and Arkansas is always good. South Alabama was in regionals 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. They've clearly had some turnover from that team, but these are good programs. And then Maryland, obviously, we have Maryland.
I will say for the Terps that that was pretty impressive the way they bounced back on Sunday to. You lose a close game Saturday against UCF, and then Sunday they're down 6-1 to Arkansas, and they just end up winning that game going away. I mean, that's pretty impressive. I mean, you know, we've kind of talked about that team toughness they have, and I think that was a pretty good sign of it.
That's definitely that's been their calling card under John Sheff the last couple of years. Let's take some of our questions via the Twitterverse. I have to scroll through all Mike's emails about jinxing programs and that kind of thing. Tweets, but that's okay. I can deal with that. We do have several Louisville and North Carolina questions in our Twitter. Mm-hmm. And a couple of them really, like, does the Louisville-Arkansas State result say more about Louisville or more about Arkansas State? I guess for me, guys, I'm just more concerned, I guess, really, with Louisville. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, even with, you know, everybody had their schedule scrambled this weekend. Yeah. So you really can't put too much of it on that. It is a little bit surprising to see Louisville not win this series. When you look at Arkansas State, just going back to having done draft coverage in Arkansas and that part of the country, nothing really stands out to me about that team. You know, David Owen, their Friday starter, is highly regarded and is expected to be, you know, one of the better Friday starters in that league. But in the Sun Belt, I'm just, you know, nothing really stands out about Arkansas State. So upper half of the Sun Belt program, but that's a series you feel like Louisville should win, neutral site or whatever, weather, whatever. So I'm a little bit more concerned, I guess, about Louisville. I don't know how you guys take that.
Well, I look at the lines for their pitchers that weekend for their three starters, and what jumps out to me is the walks. Mm-hmm. And Kyle Funkhauser, his control is something that's concerned people in the past, and you know, that glared its ugly head, reared its ugly head on Friday. He walked three guys, and he hit two batters in a 6-run third inning and allowed three hits, and that's when it kind of all unraveled. Of course, two errors were made behind him, which didn't help.
Right.
But Anthony Kidston, the next day, he gave up four walks, three runs, seven hits. And then Josh Rogers, three walks and three in a third inning. So, you know, I think in some ways I think it's a little uncharacteristic. I think they'll pitch better than that. I mean, I think those guys are too talented to put in those kinds of performances week in and week out.
But if they're going to struggle, it's going to be the control, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. So those numbers concern me. I think Louisville will be fine, mm-hmm. but it's certainly you know, they were very close to losing four straight games, if not for a late comeback.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that stands out to me is that, you know, looking through the boxes again, not seeing them in person or on or streamed, they didn't change up the lineup. They scored two and one run, so three runs the first two games. Mm-hmm. But clearly Dan McDonald, which is something mm-hmm. I actually like, he didn't mix things up too much. He stayed the course. He kind of believes in his guys. And they did come out, you know, it was like he talked about Jim with some of these other games, mm-hmm. where the Sunday, the third game, end of the weekend, you used to get these slugfests. You still can get them when teams are out of pitching, mm-hmm. but we got it in the end of this Arkansas State-Louisville series, and Louisville was able to take advantage. I know they're very encouraged. I know they like Brendan McKay, the freshman out of Pennsylvania, who had like 60-some scoreless innings as a high school senior in Pennsylvania, and he strikes out eight in four scoreless innings mm-hmm. to wrap that series up for them. So they do have a something good to build off of, but I think they believe in their guys is what it looks like.
That's why their first 2 weeks have been a little underwhelming. I mean, they did go 2-1 in Clearwater, but they lose to Fullerton. Now this, also they're just 3-3. But I mean, it's like we said, we expect them to be fine. I mean, I think that veteran rotation was probably one of the big reasons we had them so high in the preseason. So you have to assume those guys will figure it out. And it's it's only been 6 games, so it's not enough to press the panic button. But it's a little unsettling, shall we
say? I'd say I think it is. It's concerning to watch that going forward. Now we dropped Liberty and Florida International out of this week's rankings. Last week we dropped Cal State Fullerton out of the rankings with the Titans and Cardinal and Stanford. That used to be a big rivalry. It's still kind of a rivalry. But obviously you had some changes at Fullerton, and the Titans lost the series again this weekend. So a big series win for Stanford, one of the better, and definitely one of the better Friday night matchups that we had in the country with Cal Quantrill and Thomas Eshelman. Those guys really went at it and both pitched very well. I think Eshelman had, 5-6 no-hit innings in that?
Yeah, I think he was perfect for 5 or 6 innings, I think.
Yeah, but Fullerton hasn't hit. They just haven't hit yet this week, this year. And again, it's early, but you'd rather hit than not hit. So far, they're in the not hit. We moved in Dallas Baptist, and we moved in Ole Miss. Which of those teams really stands out for you guys? I mean, obviously, we rank both teams. It feels like Ole Miss is more of like they were in that 26-30 range in the preseason. We didn't quite put them in the rankings to start, and they haven't dominated yet, but they have won both their weekends. It feels like Dallas Baptist is the team that almost jumps out a little bit more to both of us, or to the three of us guys. I mean, besides just Daniel Salters, and this is a team that had to replace some pitching, but there's some real power arms with DBU. I'm a fan of theirs. I feel mm-hmm. like that team's going to be pretty dangerous this season with the talent that they have. Either of those teams stand out for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of on board with Dallas Baptist coming into the year. That's been a pretty consistent program the last few years. And, you know, obviously they get, like you said, they have some big arms. Joe Shaw, Corey Taylor, guys that can run it up pretty good, and they can always hit. That's kind of been their trademark under Dan Heefner, and I'll say, you know, Salters is kind of the pillar of that lineup. But they're I like them. I like them to, you know, to keep be a dangerous team.
And as far as Ole Miss, a big development for them, I think, as they try to put their rotation together, is getting back sophomore right-hander Brady Bramlett, mm-hmm. A guy who tore his labrum. This weekend, he threw 6 one-hit innings, struck out 11 guys, a career high.
Sounds like he's back.
He's back. He struck out 19 guys in the 12 innings he's pitched this year. So he's a big boost to their cause and someone to watch. Christian Trent, their ace, their junior left-hander, has been great as well to start the season. 6 innings, 1 run, 9 strikeouts against Wright State this weekend to kick off that series. They've won back-to-back series to start the year against, you know, William Mary and Wright State, who are two good programs.
Right.
So they're an interesting team to watch. They're a team that we certainly gave some consideration to for the top 25 before the season began.
It was really them and Tennessee, kind of two of these SEC teams that are kind of on the outside looking in. Tennessee's weather has certainly affected them. They've only gotten to play 4 games so far. But and you look at the SEC West and the whole division early, I mean, you get to control your schedule. But, like, 4-2 is the worst record so far in the SEC West. And, you know, Auburn's had some success so far this year. Mm-hmm. They're kind of handling Keegan Thompson. They threw him in midweek on 3 days rest, harkening back to what Tom Holliday did with Carlos Rodon mm-hmm. when he was at NC State as the pitching coach there. I mean, really, Alabama's already gone the road and tested itself at Houston. So the whole SEC West, Mississippi State, you know, has won its first 8 games, and they just keep on crushing the ball. I mean, I know they're playing modest competition, but if you're going to play modest competition, you know, thrash that modest competition.
And oh, they've thrashed.
They've thrashed that competition. There's no doubt about that. Our other, I guess, kind of questions, we have some North Carolina questions about Sky Bolt and Trent Thornton. And I think so far, you know, North Carolina, obviously, like we said, I mean, they would have rather have had that series here against UCLA. And, but so far, I mean, really, outside of Tyler Ramirez being a kind of guy you can't get out, hasn't really been a big surprise for North Carolina. Their infield, you know, they made six errors in the first game, and they lost to UCLA in that series. And so far, they kind of are who we thought they were. Mm-hmm. And with the weather, I don't feel like any of their starting pitchers are stretched out. We've seen Benton Moss throw hard. Right. But they haven't really had anybody go more than 5 1/3 innings yet. So I don't feel we really have a great read on them. And we did have Sky Bolt homer this weekend, which is a positive for North Carolina.
I know from talking to Scott Jackson that he's encouraged by Sky. They did a lot of work with his stance. He said that there was a lot of rigidity in his stance as he swung. So he tried to loosen him up a little bit. And, I mean, he's a guy who, regardless of his average, he's going to get on base. He's always been a high on-base guy.
Right.
Has a good batting eye. But the fact that he did homer this weekend, yes, I mean, that's a very encouraging sign. And they had him batting leadoff at one point this weekend as well. So
it was from the left side. It was from the left side, which I think is a big deal. Scouts have always preferred his right-handed swing to his left-handed swing. Mm-hmm. Before we go, we talked a ton of West Coast teams. Oregon is a team, I think, that jumped out to both of us. And UC Santa Barbara, which we put into the rankings last weekend. But Oregon, they scored a lot of runs. They had a 22-run game, and Sean Chase didn't even hit two or three home runs, which I would have expected.
Second-highest scoring game.
My Sean Chase man love knows no bounds. But so their second-highest scoring game ever, or since they resuscitated the program?
In school history.
Yeah.
Since 1974, when they scored 23.
That's a big deal. And then you have, they're playing modest competition on the weekend, but even USC is 8-0. They do have wins against Cal State Fullerton and Kentucky this week in midweek. The Trojans were another team that, you know, I believe we predicted them as a
field 64. We have them as a regional team, yep.
And
finally, breakthrough.
Yeah, so if you're going to do that, 8-0 is a better way to do it, no matter who it's against. So any of those West Coast teams, anything stand out about those teams to you, Jim, this weekend, whether it's USC or the Ducks or UC Santa Barbara, where Dylan Tate just continues the deal?
I'll say UCSB. I mean, even if Kentucky is not the cream of the crop from the SEC, getting that series as win is going to be a big thing for their resume. And I would say, I know we've talked a lot about the UCLA Carolina series, but just the fact that UCLA is talk about a team that's hitting. I mean,
that is shocking.
Week one was Hofstra. Okay, you know, we could say that's Hofstra, but to keep it up against UNC's pitching. It shows that first week was not a mirage.
It's really the top of the order for UCLA is, you know, the part of the lineup that's killing it. The shortstop Kevin Kramer is 8-for-15 this weekend. Luke Persico is 8-for-17. Ty Moore was 8-for-14 in the three games.
And those are the guys. You know, I know they talked to you about Chris Keck. Yeah. John Savage talked to you about that coming into the weekend. Mm-hmm. But really, Kramer and Moore. You know, Kramer was injured all year last year, but I feel like they felt like he was the big piece that was missing last season. And so far, he's kind of shown that. And then Ty Moore and Chris Keck were both very highly regarded players at a high school. And those guys finally doing what was hoped for from that program. It is weird to see UCLA as an offensive club. It just is weird. I mean, it's just not what they have been.
And it's another team that had some offensive question marks coming into the season is Rice.
Yeah.
a team, you know, Wayne Graham said, you know, I think we'll hit, but, you know, we got to wait and see. You know, he wasn't sure. So far they have. Again, Ryan Chandler, a freshman there, has been great for them. Leon Bird, building off of a great fall at shortstop. He's looking like a good prospect. And they're every single game this season, they have double-digit hits. Every single game.
I really do think, and you know, Hudson Belinsky, our intern, the former associate scout with the Tampa Bay Rays, has talked about it, and you just see the aggressiveness in hitters. And Jim, I don't know if you noticed it this weekend, the first time you saw some guys, this year, but I mean, it really feels like hitters are taking more aggressive hacks and are more confident because of the baseballs, and that just goes a long way.
It did, yeah, and definitely down in Coastal, it looked like guys were. Yeah, you could sense, you could feel that they knew that the fences were reachable now. It's not, you don't have to have all the stars and planets aligned to hit one over. But and I think, you know, I stopped by UNC Wilmington to see Western Carolina and George Mason, and that was more of a traditional Sunday slugfest where two teams were out of pitching, and it ended up 14-5, I think, was the final score. But you can see, I think guys, you can tell there's more confidence, there's more belief that they can, if I get a hold of one, it's gonna go.
Well, I'll be very interested to see both you guys in a couple weeks. You talked about bigger ballpark at the Pro Park down in Myrtle Beach. What is that called? That's in Myrtle Beach.
The Pelican, whatever.
It's got
a long name now, but the Myrtle Beach Pelicans Park.
Yeah, it's ticketsomething.com.
Ticketreturn.com, field at Pelicans Ballpark.
Nice and succinct.
Exactly. So when you see the Pro Parks is one thing, because they're usually a little bit bigger. The minor league parks are usually a little bit bigger than the college stadiums. But you guys are both going to be at the two big tournaments. Mike's going out west to Dodger Town to Dodger Stadium. We'll get TCU, Vanderbilt, UCLA, USC. So three top 12, top 10 teams. I guess UCLA is now number 8. So three teams that are in our top 8 currently, and then 8-0 USC. Mm-hmm. And then, Jim, you're going to the Houston College Classic, mm-hmm. as we talked about, the Astros College Classic, with the plethora of good programs that are going to be there. So you'll both get really a chance to see how this power and how much the ball travels in these big league ballparks. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a good test, because it's a lot of top teams and a lot of scouts are going to be at all those. So you'll have mm-hmm. good talent, big league ballparks, and the pressure of playing other good teams, plus the scouting presence that will be at both those games, and potentially the crowds, especially in Houston, where they definitely draw, especially with Texas.
LSU will be there.
Exactly. When LSU's there, Texas is there, that kind of thing. They draw, so.
I'll say that never have I been so excited to be going to games in the Dome.
Really?
Then we'll be that weekend.
That's it.
Enough of this weather stuff.
What games in a Dome? I think I would take Southern California over a Dome, just because you're outside.
I'm excited to get back to Southern California.
Yeah, there are positives to be had at both those, but to me, that's really going to be, and it's, plus it's the last weekend really before conference play starts. Yep. That weekend really feels like that's going to be where the college baseball season, I mean, it really starts to take some shape. Mm-hmm. We've been chalking mm-hmm. our rankings to this point. There hasn't really been a big newsworthy weekend as far as a big series sweep or mm-hmm. some team has really gone out and made a giant statement yet. Yeah. I feel like that weekend will be the one where somebody really has a chance to do that. So.
And we almost got that from Arizona State, if they had been able to add the TCU series to that Oklahoma State, but they got edged on Sunday. But obviously, like we said, UCF was really the first team to make a big jump.
They really are. And, you know, I didn't even mention when you talked about Rice, all the runs that all the offense they've generated to win a game on a walk-off steal of home against Arizona. Was that Arizona who won?
It was Arizona against Rice. It was a very, very bad meltdown for Rice. They made 4 errors in that inning. And they had the lead. They had their closers on the mound, 1-run lead.
Watched the video at baseballamerica.com that we had off the from Arizona, but I mixed up who won.
You should go to baseballamerica.com for all your video needs.
We have a lot of videos.
There's no question.
We're curating now. We're curating videos. So these things are never going to end up on SportsCenter, but I think we're going to have to just be the SportsCenter for college baseball. I mean, if our shoulders, if the burden falls to us, I suppose. We'll have to do that. We've got a green screen now.
Can we throw in some booyahs here and there?
I think we're going to have to retire that with the late stew, but we can come up with our own punchline of some kind. I'm sure there's some pithy line that hasn't been invented yet. I'll see if Craig Kilborn lets me borrow some of his, since he's not using them anymore anywhere in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. But release, rotation, splash, that's the one I remember from him. But see, that's very old. That's at least 15, 20 years old. So I have to come up with something a little bit more current. It seems like all they do now is scream. Mm-hmm. You know, Neil Everett screams a lot. I'm not even sure who else does SportsCenter anymore. The two guys in L.A., Stan Verrett, I believe, and Neil Everett. Is that it?
Yeah. Scott Van Pelt still does it.
See, that guy, I don't watch that guy. Mm-hmm. Especially Maryland alumnus, gone to the Big Ten, and just out of sight, out of mind for me down here. So I can't cotton to that. So maybe I'll just use Cotton as from the Ocho, from
you
Dodgeball.
You can't go wrong with that.
If I could just, I'm not sure how often we can use "he's ballless Cotton" in a podcast, but I just did it one time. We'll see if we can use it when we do a countdown. But we do have a ton of video up there all weekend. Our own Josh Norris is going to do a lot of that himself around here when teams come this way. If you guys want to shoot video at Dodger Town Houston College Classic, be my guest. But we do have a lot of video at baseballamerica.com and a lot of college highlights from the weekend that Vince Lara does a great job of curating. And I'm not going to use three names because that's just too many. I'm just going to call him Vince Lara. But we'll have the podcast here every Monday. You can check those guys out at Twitter all weekend, at MLanana, at Jim Schroeder, BA. I'm at John Manuel, BA, and we'll see you on the next Baseball America College podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.